Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mean Team.
Ed Jin. With guest co-host,
Ghostu.
Hello world, this is Ghostu, acting as your guest host for the wonderful show Polycast, in addition to your regulars. On the line with me is the wonderful Dan Q.
Takes a lickin' and keeps on ticking.
We have Makalua.
Is Ghostu going to go pro?
Apparently. Mad Jin. And we've got Phil.
The Phil. Hello, everyone.
2K shaves a quarter off the price of Bioshock on iOS.
And this is a wrong headline, because when I read that initial, I'm like, oh, they took 25 cents off. Price? Like, who cares?
In other news, sun came up, sky blue.
Brad Parfit on the 25th September for the Market for Computer and Video Games, or MCV, says that as of today, the iOS version of Bioshock for iPhone and iPad has been cut in price by 25%. Why, you may ask? Who is to say? Although there are certainly questions to be asked about the viability of premium price games on the Apple App Store. On the other hand, 2K's fellow iOS title, Civilization Revolution 2, continues to command a premium price. Wow. Almost 3 months after it was released. Can we conclude then that touchscreen-friendly intellectual property such as Civilization is fine at a higher price, and that the bigger issue is instead how badly first-person shooters translate to such devices? The answer to that question is no.
I'd just like to throw out, Bioshock is a pretty old game now. It's from 2008. Maybe it's because games from 2008 go on sale before games from 2014.
Although technically Civilization Revolution 2 is essentially Civilization Revolution from 2007 with some shinier graphics and a couple of new technologies and a leader here or two, so.
Fair.
I'm not editorializing in any way. You know, it's just a thought.
TK finally tells us there's not going to be strategic mode view. Thanks, guys. My laptop's going to die now.
What?
Yeah, no. They commented directly on Twitter, and then there is a thread on Reddit about it.
That's not cool. Then I have my machine and all, so I can probably run it just fine, but that's not cool.
Yeah, you know, it's not just an issue of people with the older computers or running with the integrated graphics like me with the laptop. It's also, it ran faster in that mode. It did not have to render so many things, and it just do. And especially when you get to the end game and there's so much going on, it was much better. But nope.
It seems weird. They've built it on the same engine. Like, it should just be an easy thing to put in.
Yeah, why would you pull a useful feature? I don't understand.
Yeah, that's what people on Twitter and both people in the Reddit are saying. Like, why did you pull this out?
What really took me a little bit aback about this was not so much about the announcement itself. I mean, that was there. But the fact that this was a correction from publisher 2K, because in late August, this person had asked the question based on what Arcade8583 had said on the 21st of August, which was, thank you so much. That was worrying me to no end. Pre-order done. Tells me he asked the question. So he tweeted it to 2K through the Civ Game Twitter account, and they were told, yeah, there is a strategic view. At least once 2K recognized that that was incorrect, they did follow up. They tweeted him directly as well as to their entire channel to say that we were mistaken, strategic view was not in Beyond Earth, to which Ryan responded, that's the Arcade8583, I guess I better go cancel my pre-order. It was said, you know, we can't say for sure at this time if it would come back, said 2K, but we'll certainly announce it if it returns in some form. Katie Swindle, later in the day, and this was the 26th of September, said, you guys literally removed a pre-existing feature from the engine. That's kind of sad, to be honest, and we know that Beyond Earth is based off of the Civ 5 engine, just like asked already during this episode. Ian Anderson said, any reasons why it was removed? In speaking to Rev 3 Games, the question came up in their chat because they were not only playing Civilization Beyond Earth, but they were interviewing both lead designers, Will Miller and David McDonough. Here is that specific answer about why there is no more strategic view.
3KWBG5C says, is there a return of Civ 5 strategic view?
There's not. And then actually, this is a good question. I think a few people have asked it kind of offhand, but nobody's ever asked us directly why there's no strategic view. Mm-hmm. It's a feature that many people liked, especially for accessibility reasons, found it very useful, and we're very sensitive to that, but the big sort of stumbling block was the addition of the overlay layer. The way that this overlays on the map requires this dual level of information that is best expressed in 3D space. So representing the orbital layer in an intelligible fashion on the strategic view, which is itself very information dense, a compressed version of the game, became an extremely difficult problem, and one that it ultimately became too costly to solve. We just couldn't come up with a solution that was satisfactory, that would actually have improved the game.
I think it would be helpful if that was also tweeted. Okay, maybe a little wordy, as said, for 140 characters, maybe an update to the Facebook page as well, just to get the word out.
Okay, they made a mistake with the one guy, but they did something a lot of companies do not do, which is to reach out to him and admit their mistake. Although I don't like the removal of the strategic view, that does not strike me as a bad reason necessarily, especially if it would have delayed the release of the game or caused it to be rushed otherwise. So, and I'm not happy about it, but okay, I think they handled that pretty well.
If they're going to take a feature out, I'd say that's the best possible reason. And at least they owned up to their mistake with that guy, so points for now.
And also went directly instead of just announcing that to the general public and then letting that guy find out later, maybe too late to cancel the pre-order or something.
I mean, it sucks, but that's the reality.
If the removal of strategic view was controversial across the civilization community, this point is certainly controversial in the next topic that has Australians in particular seeing red, but also worthwhile for the rest of the world to be aware of, take note of.
Yeah, I was not aware that it was quite this extent before I was reading through these articles. There's three of them. But the one that really caught me was the $40 overnight increase on Beyond Earth in Australia. In other words, the Steam prices are varying drastically, and they will just suddenly hike the price up. And there's been theories as to why that is, whether that's a mistake on the publisher or on Steam's side or whatever. But it's not a popular thing, obviously.
I knew that they'd marked up, like, hard copies of games and stuff pretty substantially, but that was the only thing I could think of for that was shipping costs. That's absolute bullshit on digital distribution. Like, it just should not be.
$30 to $40, too. Like, why?
Yeah, like, a game will be, like, what? I don't know, because the game will be, like, what, $45 here, and then it'll be, like, $60 or $70 there, and Australian dollar isn't that far off the U.S. dollar, so it's kind of like, guys, what's going on?
Well, I mean, it costs extra to ship the megabytes that far, right?
Apparently.
I guess it's how we pay for the really, really long cable between L.A. and Sydney.
We distribute by sneaker net. We put the whole thing in USB sticks, and then we run it to Australia, and then we plug it in and send it over Australian internets, which are upside down, so we have to flip the bits.
And you'll read in the comments, like, people will grab these things right as they're released because they won't be hiked up in Australia yet. Some guy's saying he got it for $50 rather than, like, $80 or something because he got it, like, right before it jumped up.
Right after the release time jump up is just even more bullshit.
That seems to be a rather huge problem for them to not have done something about it one way or the other yet. Wow.
Can you imagine the meeting at, like, wherever they price these things? Like, hey, Bob, did you remember to put the Australian markup on? Oh, hang on. Be right back. Gonna go screw them.
Apparently this is common, too. Like, what?
Yeah, in the article they're talking about, actually cheaper to fly to LA and back for a copy of one of the Adobe programs because the price markup is the same price as a ticket.
Wow. It's just terrible. And there's a couple distributors, apparently, that have at least bring it down for Australia.
Xbox World Australia outlined how you could change the region on your Xbox One.
Ah, that's right. That's also an option. And you can do that for PlayStation, apparently, as well.
Really? So you just declare that you're actually in North America, and then they sell you at the North American price?
Yeah, you can create a U.S. account, apparently, or even a Japanese account for the PS3.
Mm-hmm. Apparently you can do this with Amazon as well.
There's a simple workaround, I guess, but geez.
Yeah, some other things that were discussed in these articles, specifically the Games on Net article by Tim Cowell from mid-September. The kind of, you know, what can you do? Well, there's the shop around, first of all. I mean, yes, inevitably, if you're getting a digital copy, you're going to be getting a Steam code, but you don't have to just get that from Steam. And there is also, if you really want a boxed copy, the import route as well, which even when you take into account import duties, it can still be cheaper because of this drastic price raise. Beyond Earth is not the only game this year that has been subject to this, but it has certainly made waves as a major title that's up and coming, and all of a sudden, the price jumps considerably. The Games On article kind of goes through, well, what's going on here? Is it that Steam made a mistake? Is it that a publisher made the mistake? Did the publisher deliberately raise the price closer to launch? And of course, just as a reminder, if we're talking about Beyond Earth, we're talking about 2K, not Firaxis Games, that's the developer.
There's no way. Like, even bad publishers would know better than that. Like, even the worst ones. Even EA wouldn't do that.
Ooh, that's low.
Oh, snap.
They don't, though, because they're not stupid.
I'm actually not going to talk about this. Kind of actually know some of the internals of how that happened. Not through Firaxis, but through somebody at 2K. And it did get raised up the flagpole.
I don't think that would be secret information that somebody got their butt kicked over the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the mistake is the most likely thing in these kinds of cases, I would guess. Because other, like, deliberately doing this, just stupid.
I do know that people in the 2K community section did raise it, so it's not like you're being ignored.
Another suggestion, which I think is the most outrageous, which was local retailers forced the publisher to raise the price. Even if local retailers wanted the price to be raised, which I could see that, it's like, hey, why buy it digitally and pay all this extra money when you can get it cheaper in the store? I don't see a local retailer being able to force a publisher to do that, particularly in 2014.
No, Dan, you actually have the exact opposite. Local retailers do have the ability to force the raise in price, because if the price is not equal between digital and local, then the local stores will not buy the game, and they will kick it out, and at which point they stop getting shelf space for not just one game, but for all of the games that publisher makes. That in itself, especially when you start getting things like Walmart and other places like that, that are huge shelf space issues, and being able to get it out there, because most people still do not buy the game digitally. You can't dismiss the argument about store shelves versus digital.
That's not entirely one-sided, though, and I think over time the retailers are going to lose some power there. Well, they've already lost some, but
yeah,
so like,
right,
if they go too extreme, they will just get dropped.
I can see them applying pressure, but so I think force is a strong word. Too strong a word.
That's business.
It's called business.
I could eventually see them, the digital distribution, taking over, because there's few powers in the world more determined than nerds trying to save money.
Like, yep.
And I would not be surprised if retailers did something to accommodate digital distribution themselves, or at least attempted it somehow. Even though it doesn't make a lot of sense, but
places like EB Games in Canada, and I guess maybe in the States, they could easily go digital, do a digital version of their store.
Yeah.
Because they would have both the actual buildings for most sales, but then they could still do like a digital sale as well. And so they'd be in a good position to do that.
But how would they work in the lucrative secondhand game market on digital?
Yeah, so there's your problem.
This is why they don't want to embrace it just yet.
So there's other issues that the storefronts are causing. Because obviously publishers don't believe that you should be reselling the same game twice for the same price.
So it's important that gamers brought this to 2K's attention, and as mentioned said, it has been being paid attention to. Of course, it's not just 2K that this has quote-unquote been done to, and I think perhaps more accurately people would turn around and say, no, actually that would be the consumer that it has been done to. So it is important for a consumer response, but Tim Cowell also gets to what an appropriate response actually is, because there are counterproductive measures when you are trying to raise an important issue. It can get lost in what you say when you say it in certain ways and you direct it to the incorrect party.
Yeah.
As Tim writes, Australians feel attacked because, without any attempt to hide it, a company slaps them with an artificial surcharge that has absolutely no basis in reality for a digital product that doesn't actually exist. Meh. They've seen behind the curtain, and there's no magic, just a giant middle finger. Meanwhile, many players choose to respond in the worst possible way, attacking community reps and publisher social media accounts directly as if they're even remotely responsible for setting the prices. Do you think they enjoy reading hundreds of hours of negative feedback?
Hit on the company account, not necessarily the individuals.
Which, okay, yes, all right in law, yeah, companies are individuals.
Yeah, if you want to beef at the corporate account, then fine. But harassing the individual representative, it's probably just some intern being paid to monitor Facebook, and you want to beef them out?
Although those guys probably have a thick skin. But yeah, I mean, it's pointless to go after them all the same.
And even if you do direct visceral at the company, there is a civil way to go about that.
Well, yeah.
You don't want your important message to be lost in your understandable emotions. Leave that behind the keyboard.
Yeah.
Try not to swear.
System requirements for the PC version of it, since we know that the Mac and or Linux version is going to be a little later. They've been out for a bit, but I think we haven't talked about them yet. So Windows 7, woo! Otherwise, processor is Core 2 Duo 1.8 or Athlon X2 64 2.0. Add some random numbers here. 2 gig of memory, of course, and at least a 256 meg video card, preferably the 3600. What, really? HD 3650? Jeez. I think I had a better graphics card than that last time.
Yeah, but there's no way you're going to run the game decently on that. Yeah, sorry, because this is the same engine as Civ 5. There's no way. Like, you won't even be able to run a standard map decently on that.
The game will start, but turns will be forever.
Yeah,
pretty much. It probably won't crash on you. It'll just take longer than...
Yeah, it's something about Intel integrated graphics, but...
that doesn't work great with Civ 5. Come on, guys.
Yeah, this is a minimum, and obviously the integrated graphics are for people with the laptops that didn't also buy a graphics card for their laptop.
I tried one of those back in the Civ 4 days. My graphics card burned.
I did an interesting suggestion in the strategic view thread earlier about using the Steam Home Streaming, running on a different computer, but then look at it on the laptop. I might have to try it.
Maybe. There's other ways to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think as with pretty well any piece of software, look at the minimum system requirements and go, and then focus on the recommended. And then if you can, try to be even a little better than that. I know some people are probably like, oh, it must be nice to be made of money. Well, you don't have to be made of money right away. I think maybe that some people might be like, really? ? In terms of the system requirements, because I could see somebody saying, the game comes out in less than a month, and now I know I really need to upgrade my computer, but I kind of need, you know, a month or two to save up enough money in order to be able to do that. Well, to that I say, I understand what you're saying, but the game will still be around in a month or two.
And
you know, I think
it's 2014. Come on.
Yeah, this stuff is what they're showing for Civ 5, roughly, right? Like, this looks pretty similar. I don't have them memorized.
Higher.
It's reasonable, but yeah, I mean, we're in the same ballpark. And this stuff, I have something as much, like, double specs across the board here that I got for, like, $700. It's not that.
My focus was mostly on the graphics card. I could see some people, maybe, at this point, being like, oh, in order to get to the recommended anyway, maybe I do need to upgrade. But the processor and the memory, and, of course, I still giggle snorted at the sound card requirement, even, you know.
Well,
but anyway,
I think you'd be hard pressed to find a computer with the other specs that would lack that.
I just tabbed over to Best Buy while you guys were talking, just, you know, shopping. I found like an $850 laptop that exceeds like every single one of those specs. I mean, $850 is a respectable amount of money, but that's not a bank breaking.
Laptops aren't gaming machines.
Yeah. Well, no, all my laptops are twice as expensive or three times as expensive as that. All the laptops I've ever bought.
Actually, last summer, I bought a laptop that has not only the same amount of memory, but an even better graphics card than my desktop computer. And that laptop was $1,000, whereas it was like 2 or 3 years before that, the desktop computer was like $2,200. So in one respect, I was like, yes! And then the other part of me said a bad word. comparison.
If you're even a little bit tech savvy, I got to say, ordering the parts yourself for a computer and putting it together, it's not the difficulty it used to be. If you can follow instructions with that and, like, you're reasonably competent, just build it yourself. You'll save hundreds of dollars doing it.
Unless you can get the thing to run on a TI-83 graphing calculator, somebody somewhere is going to complain about the specs.
Yeah. But I do have to say, WinXP, if you're running it, yeah, it's really time for an upgrade.
And I would recommend 7, because the other Windows lately have just not been up to snuff.
Yeah.
I've been looking at this, like, Vista is recommended.
I still remember when we were like, Vista, we recommend you upgrade to XP. Now, I saw a Windows XP machine until earlier this year, and what finally got me to upgrade it, it wasn't because XP was doing anything wrong. It was just Microsoft's like, yeah, no more updates for that.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. And so I upgraded to Windows 7, no, Windows 8, upgraded to Windows 7, and it was like a couple $100.
Yeah, I mean, if you're running Windows Vista 64-bit version with a Service Pack 2, you should probably be okay.
Rev 3 Games interviews Beyond Earth developers while they play. You mentioned that earlier in the episode.
Trying to figure out what Civilization is, like how much of it we can change and still have it be Civilization, how to not alienate our core fan base, but bring in new fans and introduce this new science fiction setting, and how to deal with sort of the Alpha Centauri question. We're really honored that people kind of put this game and that game in the same place,
yeah.
Or like at least have that hope that they'll be in the same place. But really, this is a different game, and the thing we say is that we draw from the entire legacy of Civilization,
right.
Whereas, of course, Alpha Centauri was made 15 years ago and didn't have as much of that legacy to pull from. This game is more optimistic in tone than Alpha Centauri. I mean, in Alpha Centauri, you literally have the spaceship Unity arriving at planet with its leaders at each other's throats, and they break the spaceship apart, and that's where the game starts.
Mm-hmm.
This game is a little bit different than that. There's this tragedy or this great catastrophe that happens on Earth, but the game picks up hundreds of years after that, when the nations of Earth have come together to do this great thing, which is to perpetuate the species beyond Earth.
This was published on the 7th of October, and as was amended in the description, because when I first saw this video, this was not in there, where it notes, video begins at 12 minutes and 27 seconds in, because there is silence and nothing for 12:27, and then for some reason, at the very end of the video, they start playing some older Rev 3 features on Firaxis games and Civ titles. Like, the editing is bad at the beginning and the end, so set that aside. The content itself, there were some interesting things that came out of it. We already heard the response, the explanation as to why there is no strategic view in Beyond Earth, in follow-up to a tweet about that happening. The most interesting information actually came out of not the questions that the interviewer at Rev 3 Games was asking, but the people in the chat. There were some Civ players clearly in the chat asking questions, and they were being asked well, and then again, the lead designers, Will Miller and Dave McDonough, were responding.
Mandena says, with no great people, religion, or tourism systems, what replaces the micromanagement of those systems?
Not having to do
not
that?
Not having micromanagement.
Yeah, right. It sounds like a problem that we fixed.
Cool.
Let me take that question seriously, and I'm not snarky. Like, the late game sort of opportunities that tourism and great people provided were very sensitive to. But that was sort of like, I would say, by the time that Civ 5 had both of its expansions, it had sort of hit a good stride for things to do at every stage of the game.
Okay.
We designed this game holistically with sort of the same thing in mind. So when you start the game, you have the same kind of early things to take care of, like exploration and infrastructure and so on. But one of the things that makes our late game much more interesting is sort of the continued expansion of the orbital race. Like, when your territory starts to really overlap and you need to maintain power there, you fight in the orbital space a lot more. Covert ops becomes a huge deal because everybody has spy agencies and are competing for attacks of opportunity, defense, trying to get intrigue up or down in cities. It's its own kind of miniature war in its own right. There's more than enough to keep your attention there. And then the big one is quests, particularly the victory quests. The attention will focus to executing and protecting your victory attempt, or watching for the other players to do theirs and attempting to unravel it.
AI and the difficulty scaling.
So here's a question from a Whirlwind 86 who asks, in Civ 5, the AI at higher difficulties had some big advantages against the player. Did you integrate difficulty scaling differently in this than in Civ 5?
Yes and no. So we integrated it that way, plus some other more sophisticated ways.
Gotcha.
So the AI does get advantages over you in the very higher difficulty levels. But we also spent a lot of time just flat out improving the way it contemplates the game and the way that it understands its advantage and power. So the AI is a little more shrewd kind of across the board. You'll notice that even on the normal difficulty levels, that you sort of have to know what you're about or pay attention to what they're doing so that you can thwart them at the right time. And on the higher difficulty levels, we sort of like take the shackles off of that and let them like really, really play efficiently.
Hey.
So less free stuff for AI, smarter AI?
Well, we can always hope.
That'd be ideal.
Well, I'm sure once people get in and, you know, check the game files, they'll find out whether or not that's actually true. Otherwise, I would always prefer a better AI at higher difficulty levels and then put little shackles on it, as they were saying, for lowering difficulty level to get down to medium. And anything below the Civ 5 version of whatever Prince is in BE, the player gets all the advantages.
I know we've discussed on the show before the comparison between, like, how do you make the game more challenging? Do you give the AI more bonuses, cheats, or do you actually try to program an AI that's more intelligent? And the question occasionally, or maybe more than occasionally, comes back to, well, there is this thing called money. And there is this ideal way to go about making the AI more intelligent, but between money and time restraints, that it just kind of, well, let's just give the AI a bunch of bonuses that the human player doesn't get. So, in effect, in other words, if the AI was being treated like a human player, then it would be regarded as cheating. So it is nice to hear a response to that, and also an effort to try to combat at least the perception that something should change in terms of not only just AI intelligence on higher difficulty levels, but quite frankly, the answer addressed all difficulty levels, really.
I think they can even go about, if you're going to give your AI advantages and, like, air quotes here, cheats, what exactly you're giving it. So maybe not so much like cheaper techs and faster units, but even just more information. Maybe on the equivalent of Immortal and Deity, it starts to see almost the entire map and it's more pressing it that way rather than just being like, I start 2 settlers up and 5 techs ahead. Rather deal with something that knows more than it should rather than a foot race to try and catch up to a material advantage.
Yeah, well, it kind of depends. I mean, we already have people who claim that the AI cheats by seeing everything, even though it doesn't. And people have been, like, all cranky, like, oh my god, it might see everything!
It sees things differently. Everything is a bit much.
Yeah.
Yes, it's okay, people. The AI is not Patrick Stewart. They have not seen everything.
But even if it knew, like, you know, you're building a wonder or something, it knows the moment you start. In theory, that's available to the player just by watching little city icons and stuff, but, you know, it knows if it's behind.
It's also available to the player if you have a
Citizenship
5. If you have a spy, you can in the city, you can go check exactly how far they are, because, well, you just go look at their city and see all their buildings and everything else. So it's, I would love for the AI to use its spies to go bounce around, check all the buildings, therefore build out a model of your tech available, and then counter it with other stuff.
The Star of Hope in the chat says, making an AI that is harder isn't always the same as making an AI that's fun, so that might be one trade-off.
Yeah, no, the game is fun. You make the AI that actually uses the game, and that makes the game more fun. See? Difference. You don't make the AI harder by handing it a bunch of stuff. That's not really the point, although they have to at this point because they don't have an AI that's better. You don't make the AI that's fun. If you want to play fun, there's middle difficulty levels for that, unless you find playing on DD fun. I do, mostly. The question of what you consider fun. There are a lot of people out there who consider beating a good opponent more fun than just, hey, look, I've got free stuff. That's awesome.
You could almost take it the XCOM route. Like, impossible difficulty there was less a matter of how do I win and more like how far can I get before you lose. You could add another difficulty above metaphorical deity here, like suicide, and it's just how long can you go before you lose because they've given it so much stuff.
The new level above Apollo, you land last. People would actually probably play that just for that.
Half serious, half joking here, but I'm like, yeah, there is a difficulty level higher than what we see from the AI. It's called multiplayer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Multiplayer comes with its own strings attached.
Competitive
though, right?
Multiplayer, though. Mm-hmm.
The only thing is, though, we don't want the AI to become too like a human. It could be like, hey, so I'd like to play a game, and the AI would be like, not right now. Game exits. What?
That would be hilarious.
AI rage quit.
I could go with an AI rage quit if you're just crushing it.
In this interview, the AI also came up in another respect, and it had to do with diplomacy and affinity.
Bill Aldraz on YouTube is asking, how does your affinity affect diplomatic relations with civs who went down another path? Will they oppose you heavily, or will it be more based on your history with the civ prior to affinity decisions?
Those two will work with or against each other. So everything that you've done diplomatically with a civ will influence them, positive or negative. Mm-hmm. If you have a long history of friendship, you'll have strong sort of momentum to be remain friends. But the more the two of you devote yourselves to divergent affinities, so like if you're both kind of middle-level affinities, like level 5, 6, it won't matter that much. But if one of you is like 12, 15, or let alone if both of you are really heavily devoted to divergent affinities, that will be a pretty strong incentive away from cooperation, because really what we're representing is fanaticism. You just don't understand how you can think like that anymore in one person. So there's... as everybody in the game gets more devoted, which is inevitable as the game progresses, it becomes harder and harder to like remain on really good terms with people of a different affinity.
So it's important to pay attention to what the AI is doing, what your neighbor is doing, and that yes, before you are choosing a particular affinity and the AI is choosing a particular affinity, you are going to be able to cultivate a relationship that may even be able to stand a divergence of affinity. But to me, it's just kind of this is going to start happening more quickly than, say, in Civilization V, and you choose one particular ideology and the AI chooses another. Yeah, you can be cultivating that relationship, but just be aware that relationships do change over time, and if you make a particular choice, then you have a dominant affinity that's different than somebody else, then the AI is going to recognize, we're just not the same person anymore, or maybe we want the same thing, but we just don't feel the same way about how we're going to get there, so that will have an effect. It's not like a light switch. It's not like, oh, different affinity, everything you did in the previous X number of turns is now gated, we now hate you.
Yep.
It's not going to be that bad.
I've shown that in my recent Cavazin Protectorate game. I'm still friendly with, and even get cooperation agreements with people of different affinities.
That sounds better than the current system of Civ 5, where it's like, oh, you picked a different ideology, instant massive diplomatic penalty. Like,
yeah. But, I mean, keep in mind, if you are of a different affinity and you do piss them off in a different way, those two things start stacking, and eventually that will drive them away. But, yeah, the penalty's not so bad as for ideologies.
And I hope it's not, like, the instant penalty. You know, you can do the one-day, 180-degree switch. Like, I really liked you up until now, but now you think that freedom stuff is good, and we just can't be friends anymore.
No, that didn't happen in my Cavathan Predictorate playthrough, so.
Sweet.
Now, I mean, granted, I also have people of the same affinity who just don't like me. So, yeah, it works both ways. Just because you are the same affinity doesn't mean they're going to like you.
In terms of questions that were asked, it didn't surprise me because the question was answered, but it was the way in which the question was answered.
Obby the Observer on Twitch is asking, why can't humanity settle cities underground in the ocean or on top of mountains in the future?
Well, maybe they could, but it's not efficient. I mean, when you land on a new world, frankly, it's surviving. Finding things to eat is a lot harder than we take it for granted. We take it for granted on Earth how easy many things are for us, because we evolved on this planet. Like, we match it. When you land on the new world, nothing can be taken for granted. So humanity will settle where they can and live where they can. And, like, only by the very end of the game could you conceivably make the argument that they are able to build oceanic cities and things like that.
I was not prepared for an in-universe answer, but I really enjoy it.
Yes, makes sense. Land on your planet. I know. I'm going to go underwater from space. Hey, wait, my spaceship is meant for, you know, space, which has no gravity issues. Let's put it underwater where it's, like, instantly massive gravity issues. That'll work.
Now, granted, on some planets, you might be better off in the water, but you're probably not going to that planet on purpose from the start.
I mean, one of the things is, like, you might want to dig an underground city, because digging holes is not particularly technically complicated. Radiation on a new planet, magnetosphere isn't that strong. Better get underground or you're going to have three heads soon.
Yes, but you need the machinery. And if you didn't bring it with you, then you have to get the machinery. And if you didn't bring the things to make the machinery with you, then you have to build the things that make the machinery. And if you didn't bring the raw materials to do those things, then you have to go get the raw materials to make the machinery.
Well, you brought some of that, but I think it's fair to say that you can just abstract some of that as well, because from just looking at the game standpoint, it would just be awful if everything was underground.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
if you go to the underground lair, then you might as well just put the stuff on the surface.
Yeah. It makes sense from a gameplay perspective, but at the same time, like, went to new planet, forgot shovels. Damn it.
Well, yeah.
Well, you can bring a shovel, but you're not using a shovel to make an underground city.
And you're not working hard enough for that shovel.
You could put yourself underground. I mean, you just slam the spaceship into the ground. And sure, some people will make it.
Getting underwater isn't actually all that hard either. Surviving there might be, but...
Yeah, that's true. You could just land the spaceship in the water and do nothing. You'll eventually find your way underwater.
Very poor colonization plan, though.
Yeah.
Step one, sink.
The local aliens are like, what the heck?
I just want to say also that I'm really enjoying the caliber and the specificity of the questions that we're getting from the Civ fans in the audience. It's been...
Thumbs up, Civ fans.
Yeah.
We're used to... I mean, a lot of our fans know this game really, really well.
Yeah.
And what we really like about these live streams is the opportunity to speak directly to them and really get down to kind of the nitty-gritty.
Thank you all for joining us from Firaxis Games. My name is Pete Murray. Up till now on this live stream, we started out showing you the beginning of the game, how to interact with the aliens. We've shown you how the various systems in the game. We've taken it down deep under the hood and shown you how it works. But one of the things that we haven't done is we haven't done a straight-up Let's Play. And so it seemed like it would make a lot of sense to do that for the live stream. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to begin a multi-part playthrough of Civilization Beyond Earth. I'm going to play as Brasilia. We're going to start at the opening menu, and we're going to go through until we achieve a victory, domination victory.
I like how he gives away what victory he's going for right away. Like,
no, no, that was the intention.
I think the aliens are going to win a domination victory.
It's a three-part series.
There's something to be said for those kinds of Let's Plays, though. They can be amusing to watch now and then.
What's this colony going to evolve into? You know, right now they're going to be focused on survival and learning about the world around them. But we'll have to see what happens from there. All right. So we are in orbit. Oh, and it actually looks like this is a pretty decent start right here. All right.
I can't help but feel like just comparing again to Civ 5, like Brasilia here is like a pretty war-heavy Civ back in Civ 5 and in the bygone past. Pedro would be so disappointed with you. What have you done? Why are you so angry all the time? Can't we just have carnival?
I enjoyed some of the comments, actually, on CFC. Mackie will appreciate this. Imagine too. Gigi Moyang says, how long will it last? Will Pete be able to end this game before the release? And Incessant May says, if he has enough caffeine, he can. It seems how it's already well underway. Yeah, he's going to be able to finish it before Beyond Earth is released on the 24th of October. But imagine you also had a question for Pete, which he did answer in the thread.
Hmm?
You asked, the only question, will Pete play a random map or the one I give him?
Oh.
To which Pete replied, random map, because you are evil, sir.
Oh, yes.
Pete Murray, the marketing associate at Civ developer Firaxis Games. And then Carl0413 says, so how evil is Madge anyway in regards to poor Pete? And Mad, do you remember what she said?
Not really, but I'm sure you got it.
I do. Your response was, quote-unquote, quite.
Yeah. I gave him a map that I had found, and, well, basically, the Terra-style map is not part of the game in BE. So anyways, there was a map that happened to scroll out like that, and it was a Brasilia game. And, yeah, the starting position was completely surrounded by AIs. And I
figured,
what? Yeah. so I figured, hey, I'll just give this one to Pete, and he can play with that one. Because people on the forums and that were talking about, oh, I wonder what you can do about with a welcoming committee where you go and try and take out the AIs as they land. I'm like, this is the perfect map.
I would not be surprised if Pete is playing that map. He's just not streaming it.
I think he probably opened the map, looked to see what would happen after 10 turns. And
went, oh, hell no.
Nope.
He noped out.
Yeah, because it was also on Apollo, so.
Yeah. Oh.
That was amusing to find out, because there was an entirely other continent over there with only aliens on it, too. So, enjoy. All the aliens with all their nests have bent at least 100 turns multiplying.
There was also a good exchange between Mananen and Pete, where Mananen's like, I hope this is just Pete playing. Maybe it's just me, but I've noticed Pete's decision-making slows down in a big way when he's discussing options with other people. I like how Pete kind of turned that comment on its head, which was, yes, but when Pete makes decisions by himself, he makes terrible decisions. To which Mananen says, but they're quick terrible decisions. Otherwise known as more entertaining. But I think that's common. If you are busy discussing options with other people, it is going to slow down your decision-making, which is why in the Rev3 interview, there would be one lead developer on Beyond Earth talking to the interviewer and answering questions while the other person was playing the game.
Mm-hmm. He ended up playing by himself.
All right, start. Let's see if there's anybody home. Yep, there's some wolf beetles in the nest. We'll go ahead and we'll give that a wide berth. I'm very disappointed in this world and the other people who have landed on it.
I mean, when you talk through all your decisions, at least you have that whole peer review, like, maybe I should wait, what are you thinking?
Yeah, you have some time to react to your bad ideas.
Let's attack Russia in winter. Wait, no.
Nearby, there are 3-6 Xenomass resources, which seems like a complete absence of any Phyraxite or Float Zone, which means it looks very much like we're going to need to make a decision to go towards Harmony. Doesn't look like we're going to be able to go in a Harmony direction. I find 9 Float Zone. And that's to gather what we are going to temporarily call the Western Resource Zone. I think we need to get something out there fast. This place is just too fantastic for words. This is a little bit, it feels a little dangerous to do this, but I'm aiming for that spot of grassland right there.
And still on the news front, because there's just so much stuff and things. The first Phyrexicon. Phyrexicon was held on the 27th of September. The first Civilization gaming convention from developer Phyrexis Games. Yes, I know there was some XCOM stuff in there too. So, okay. First Phyrexis Games fan convention in that case.
I hope if you came, you had a wonderful time. All sorts of really great stuff in the course of the weekend. We had nearly 200 fans join us in Hunt Valley. If you didn't make it this year, we're hoping we can do it again.
All of the panels were recorded, and the first one has been made available publicly. It was on the 8th of October, and it was an evening with Sid Meier and Jake Solomon of Phyrexis Games, where Jake interviewed Sid.
We always made games for ourselves, basically. I think in a lot of ways we still do that. We make games that we like to play, and hopefully somebody else will enjoy it as well.
I've heard from other people saying, I've heard these answers before, so why bother? And I think in some cases it's not so much the questions that are asked and answered, but how they are asked and answered. Because I have heard some of these answers before as well, but it was often in written form and like, yeah, that's interesting. But it was entertaining at times.
It's hard to imagine the days before the internet, but, you know, you'd send a game out there, send a bunch of floppies, and maybe a letter would come back 2 or 3 weeks later. Hey, I bought this game. It's pretty cool. Here's what I would change, but, you know.
Not entirely different. That's fair. I mean, that's something that I think is one of the things that I
yeah. And being willing to listen to other people. You know, I think that again.
Did you say that when I was talking? Yeah. Did you seriously do that while I was talking? When you play the games of people who worked pretty closely with you, so Age of Empires or Rise of Nations, Brian Reynolds, Rise of Nations, XCOM, like when you play those games...
Pardon me?
XCOM, it's about an alien, never mind. No. It's. I've worked with you for 15 years. So, sorry.
You got to hear about Sid Meier from his past to his present, and he also talked about his future.
You got a lot of career left. You're still a young man. But do you care about your legacy? And if you do, I mean, do you know what you want that to be?
It really comes home at an event like this where you see a father and a son or a mother and a daughter. The parent has passed on their enjoyment of gaming, of a strategy to their child, and there's a bonding there, you know, that I've experienced with my son when we play a game together. The opportunity to create those situations and those opportunities. You know, on the other hand, I think if you start talking about legacy or something, you're kind of done, and I still have a lot of games I still want to write.
A legacy of anybody is really not set, as far as I'm concerned, by the person themselves. That's what happens, particularly after the fact. Topics included whether games contribute well to society.
Now, you can say no, but it'll be awkward. So please support your answer, okay, is what I'm saying here.
Well, I'll defer that question to everyone here. What do we think? Yes, they are. Having fun is important.
Talk about the longevity of Phyrexis.
I think every studio that's lasted a long time has had a strong title, but not every studio with a strong title has lasted a long time. We've focused really on listening to Civ players, trying to think about, you know, with the next iteration of Civ, what are we going to do to make it fresh and new, but also have those core qualities that appeal to Civ players. You know, we have the one-third, one-third, one-third rule, where it's, you know, one-third is the traditional gameplay, one-third is improved from the last version, and one-third is brand new. So, and we're now at the point where for every new feature we put in, we have to take something old out. Yeah. It's very easy to overwhelm the player with complexity or detail, things like that.
Seeing as how Phyrexis first came into business 18 years ago in 1996, I think they're doing something right. I think they've found people that like to play games that they like to play. Talked about responsibility for games.
What responsibilities do we have as designers, as game developers? What responsibilities do we have for the content that we're sort of creating?
I'm certainly not in favor of any sort of censorship. You know, I think we're artists, we're creative, and we should be able to do what we want. On the other hand, it's hard to, on the one hand, say our games are immersive, and grab people and allow them to participate and make them the stars, and then say that there's no impact, that it doesn't affect them. So I think we have to walk that line. You know, I think people know the difference between fantasy and reality. Gamers are very mature and intelligent people, yes. However, it's part of the climate, and whatever we can do to create a positive climate, I think we should do.
There was a fair bit of information.
Is it harder now to make games? I mean, do you feel like it's harder to make games, or is design harder than it was 25, 30 years ago?
I think it's easier to make games these days. With the tools that are available out there, or the tools certainly we have at Firaxis, we can put something together very quickly. It's hard to make a game that stands out, I think. I mean, a lot of the genres have been explored, and just about every game, if you have a great game idea, you Google it, and there are three of them already out there. So I think it's very easy to make games, but to make something that's fresh and that stands out is harder these days.
Well, then what was the hardest game you worked on, the toughest experience for you as a designer?
Probably the dinosaur game. I've talked about that a little bit, but I wanted to make a dinosaur game and thought first it was a kind of a civilization style world of dinosaurs, and that was kind of boring because it didn't have enough dinosaur action. And then say, well, okay, I'm going to turn it into an RTS, you know, real-time strategy game with your Age of Empires with dinosaurs. So I put that prototype together, and there are no ranged dinosaurs. You know, I was inventing venom-spitting dinosaurs, and, you know, I was just missing that ranged combat. So we just would all, you know, cluster together and chew on each other.
Sounds like a good time.
There is someone on the panel of this show right now that was there in more than just spirit. He was also there in mind and body, or at least... Body,
because I was still sleeping the whole day. Okay, next for FraxCon, remember, show up one day earlier than the earlier day, because I did show up one day before FraxCon, but I should have showed up a day earlier than that so I could actually sleep. I did grab some of the Fraxis coffee, but I didn't drink enough of it, probably.
How is Firaxis' coffee?
Mine's better.
I knew he'd say that.
So anyways, yes, I was at Firaxis and FraxCon. I got a bit of a tour, met Sid first, because Sid's office is right by the door. Really weird.
So was the tour comparable to what we saw from Rev 3 Games last year when they did a tour of the offices? Because I was at the old Firaxis office. I've never been to the new Firaxis office.
The new Firaxis office is kind of like a spider web. It's a lot of tunnels, or an ant's nest, maybe.
Wait, are you saying it might be like a tech web?
No.
What about an XCOM-style ant's nest?
Probably more like the ant's nest. Various corridors going down, people putting their little pods. And
oh, so like SimAnt?
Maybe.
You see, kids, there was this game.
They've got lots of stuff on the shelves and board games everywhere and other such stuff. And, of course, we're busy erasing things because everybody was showing up. Basically met everybody on the team for both Beyond Earth and Civ 5, especially all the people in QA who were very, very happy to meet with me. And the only people I didn't meet were Will and Dave, mostly because they were probably off at some other media thing. No clue what they do. Anyway, so yeah, and then we got into the live stream with Pete, obviously. Sleep, got back, got to the hotel. We did a meet and greet night on the Friday night before FraxCon. So yeah, most of the people at Fraxis just showed up to the meet and greet anyways, because apparently on Friday nights they have their booze night, or, you know, they have their after work booze. So they just all showed up to the hotel to come hang out with all the people who actually showed up early. Hung out with Brad, who's the multiplayer dev. Brad's fun. He's got a new baby, so that was about the only time I could actually meet and greet with him.
Oh, yes, Brad Olson. Yep.
Yeah. And then since not a lot of people showed up, well, since it appeared that the two-hour or three-hour meet and greet got turned into more like a 5 to 6 hour meet and greet, I got to meet Ono and Kamikaze. Ono is one of the mods on 2K and hangs out on CFC a bit. Kamikaze, of course, is one of the mods for CFC. But I had a lot of fun trolling them because we've known each other for a while, and obviously I'm just use my mansion name everywhere. So they're like, they're coming in. Kamikaze showed up way too late, but I know Ono came right on in. He came wandering over, met some Firaxis people, turned and got, you know, introduced to me, and he's like, oh, this is awesome. I can finally figure out your name, and grabs my tag, looks at it, and says, Mad Jim.
Nice.
And he's like, just like the look on his face as soon as he saw that was just priceless. Complete troll, because it's supposed to be first name, last name. So I'm like, fine, Mad, Jim, that'll work.
I approve of this trolling.
I mean, I even tweeted a pic of the badge when I got there. So, of course, it was, you know, if found, please send back to bed.
This is something that came up in the Polycraft chat, which is our Minecraft spinoff. So Stu's the only one on the panel that doesn't know anything about this. There was the photo of the cake, quote-unquote controversy. Oh. Where?
What?
Someone's stealing his cake, oh no.
Yep. There is a photo where Majin can be seen in the foreground, and people know what Majin looks like, not even just from the live stream with Pete. Hand is on a plate of cake, and it's halfway kind of in the air off the table and on the table to the person beside you. And there was a suggestion that you were stealing somebody's cake, but I came to your defense right away, Majin, although it was not so much about you as it was to get into a semi-legal argument, because I like these things. Uh-huh. Lawyer Dan is lawyering, like Mackie says.
Mm-hmm.
And just said, you know, it could be, in fact, that Majin was delivering the plate in front of the person, because we know about Majin. We don't know anything about the person. Purely speculation. There was no cake in front of you, Majin, so you could have already consumed it. You may not have been served it yet. There were so many things that we did not know. But it just kind of an extended conversation. I would say in our group, we spent more time talking about that than anything else having to do with this convention at all.
Yeah.
Which really goes to show just how off-ball we can be and often are.
They started doing dessert just as Jake and Sid were getting up to do the interview. So they, like, what they wanted was a picture of, hey, look, we're getting dessert and discussion at the same time. But we were the first table to get dessert so that they could take the picture, and then they stopped serving dessert to everybody. They wouldn't allow anybody else to get dessert until after the interview was over. And yes, I was handing the cake to the person beside me because I had, actually, I think I actually had David McDonough behind me or something like that, because that's what, one of the comments on the picture on, I think, the 2K forums was, why is Matt Jin further to the front than David McDonough? But it basically, it's like, just because of the way the tables were, like, squished together, it was easier for us to pass the cake around rather than making them try and fight their way through the chairs.
So did you eat your cake in front of everybody else then?
Absolutely.
Although probably most people didn't pay any, never mind, because they were busy looking at Sid and Jake.
Yeah. Yeah, because I was at the table with Jake, so, you know, once he got up and got out of the way, I was able to see Sid better.
I can't help but bring this up because it's connected. I had prefaced Firaxicon, the first Civilization convention from Firaxis Games, because there was a Civilization convention in 2006 called Polycon.
Mm-hmm.
And I found myself through circumstances I won't reiterate here, but I ended up being the lead organizer, and I had a great team of people assisting me when I was still at a Polton Civilization site. And it was both Firaxis Games as well as the now defunct Big Huge Games were a part of it. We also had lanyards around ourselves, and it had the Polycon logo, and it had our first names and last names. There was nobody that got to do a Mad Space Jin.
Mm-hmm.
It was first name, and then in quotations, your username, your form handle, and then your last name.
The prize for silliest thing possible to happen at Fraxicon was the drunk dude from the wedding who ran in while the guy was getting the golden mutton and took a selfie of himself with it. Drunk dude from wedding had to go try and spoil it with a selfie.
What, there was like a wedding two doors down or something?
Well, in the same hotel, there was a wedding at the same time. Or at least they were staying at the hotel. And of course, the chick who was running around yelling into our area, I think trying to find her husband or her boyfriend, and yelling rather loudly, if that he is at those computers, I will kill him. Yeah, because, I mean, obviously in the same room as where everything else was going on was also where all the computers were for people who played Beyond Earth. But once it got past like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, no one really paid attention to whether or not you were part of Rexicon. I mean, they were still keeping an eye on stuff to make sure people weren't doing silly stuff, but it wasn't like, okay, get off the computer after an hour sort of thing anymore. There will be a next year, maybe. Don't quote me on that.
No. Well, we will quote you. Somebody will, anyway.
Maybe.
The Star of Hope actually says, we're expecting Polycon 2015 to beat Firaxicon next year. Get on it, Dan. Oh, he's a smiley face.
Uh-huh.
I appreciate that notion, but I think if there were to be such a thing, it would be like a subset. Just because of the logistics, Polycon 06 was a blast, but the cost, and I'm just, and this is a comparison, and you have to remember, this was also 8 years ago, the cost for registration for a Polycon was $150 as compared to Firaxicon's $40, and part of that was simply just because the number of people. Pete did say that there were about 250 people that were at Fraxicon, and I think it was supposed to be closer to 300, but some people got screwed out of their flights, right?
Yeah, the whole Chicago problem.
If there was a Fraxicon 2015, if I was able to go, the timing worked and everything, and man, if Phil and Mackie and Madge, and there's a lot of ifs here, it'd be great to do like a Polycast recording live. I've said this before, and that would be amazing. So maybe it's in the cards. Time will tell.
You mean I wouldn't have to reach through the internet to slap you guys?
Yeah.
That's when we can finally do this thing off. We'll do this thing off live. All together.
You can do that?
Run around the room trying not to get beat by Mackie. Next Fraxicon, next year, maybe we can do a Polycast get-together, or even go crazy and have a Polycraft get-together.
Or both.
Or both.
I linked ourselves.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Dave, and in particular Will, had to defend themselves, and yes, I put defend themselves in giant quotation marks.
XSegX says, these guys do not look like game developers, they don't have beards. So
you must be confusing us with the team that made Evolve.
Right. Oh, almost all beards.
Yeah, right. They took that way too seriously. No, Will's not even capable of growing one. He's actually 14 years old.
You guys weren't kidding about injecting young blood into the Civ team, I guess.
Just turned 29. Come on, guys.
Okay.
I don't know. Ed doesn't have a beard. Anton doesn't have a beard.
So what we are saying here is that they are the anti-beard game developer. Let's start a thread on it right now. Reddit,
okay.
Let's go. Can we talk about Beyond Earth? No, we must talk about the lack of beards.
It is their single greatest mistake as programmers. They neglected their beards. That's probably why there's any mistakes in the code at all. They don't have the beards.
The longer the beard, the less the bugs, right?
Exactly.
Because the beards attract the bugs into the beard,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Makes the beard all dirty.
And then it processes the bugs into something greater inside of the beard.
Well, let's be honest. Beards have been proven to increase effectiveness at so many things. Programming is just natural.
Right. So, this has been Polycast episode 212, just to mess with Dan. And, of course, we have been joined by guest co-host, Ghost 2.
I'm Stu, and I'm signing off.
Regular co-host, Daniel Quick.
If you went to Fraxicon, you may have a certain swagger about you.
Lady reaches through the interweb to beat Dan.
Yeah, right about now for that pun. Slap.
Yes.
And, of course, the secondary writer, mean team.
Secondary writer?
I'm just making crap up.
What? That's how the show stays fresh, Phil. Go with it.
That's nice and random. Well, okay. My nation will come for you from the water. You can trust me.
And I showed up, so bye.
And you were / are?
Still here.
And your username?
This has been Matt Jen. See you later.
Speaking of tearing into an ugly...
What?
Next topic.
Me? What? Oh, crap, me. Walked right into that.
That should be printed on a t-shirt. Oh, what, me? Crap.
Polycast every time.
Well, I just smoke sprayed my laptop with coffee. Well played.
It runs better on coffee. Wait, no, I run better on coffee.
Coffee is not a protective coating for electronics. Pro tip.
You don't spray coffee and it runs faster?
I've lost a few keyboards to coffee.
Coffee's just engineer fuel.
We had Fraxicon recently, our first big fan convention, and a lot of people brought their old Alpha Centauri gear to have Sid sign it. I wish we could have let Brian Reynolds know so he could have been there too to sign stuff, because there was a lot of Alpha Centauri swag there.
How may the corporation serve you?
How may the corporation serve me? You can get off my planet.
Come, Mr. Haban. The Commonwealth welcomes you.
Thanks, Futama. Get it? Instead of, like, thanks, Obama. Thanks, Futama. I'd like to thank the guys on Sid Fanatics for that terrible joke.
That's a pen, the Fraxicon report. Who won that prize mutton or whatever the heck it was?
Some dude.
Some dude. That dude. That scribes got 99% of Fraxicon.
Record date October 11th, 2014. Civilization Beyond Earth video clips, copyright Rev 3 Games and 2K Games. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.